I want to talk about Jägermeister. Dad, what do you know about Jägermeister?
I mean, well, really, all I know, it's got a really awesome stag logo. What else do I need to know about Jägermeister?
Well, you should know that you've been drinking it all wrong this entire time.
Damn, that's cold. There's a right and wrong way to drink it?
Yes, there is, Dad. You should be drinking it ice cold, at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, to be exact.
Well, you know what? That explains a lot. I've just been pulling it straight off the shelf.
Oh, Dad, I'm so glad I got to you in time. No, that is entirely wrong. The only way to serve Jägermeister is ice cold. So wherever you're at, if you're hanging out with friends, or you're at the bar, or you're helping your dear sweet father try and get right, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York. Lots of things go better together. Hockey, food, golf, peanut butter and jelly, Gojo and Golic, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. What? But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Gojo and Golic. Mike Golic Jr., Mike Golic Sr., Claudia Bellafato at the DraftKings Studios in Boston. We got a great show for everybody. As always, make sure you download, subscribe, rate, and review us. Leave us a 5-star rating and check us out here live Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on the DraftKings Network, and from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern, wherever you hear VSiN on the radio for the best of Gojo and Golic. Plenty of action coming up today after a wild night in the NBA and in New York in general, which we'll get to. But Claudia, what do we got coming up?
And we're not talking any hockey in the show, so I'm just going to let everybody know, yes, the Bruins won 5-1, round two, game one against the Panthers. But we have NBA. We have NFL, because Kirk is irked. Did the Falcons do wrong by Cousins? The Stars are out, setting up for another wild NBA offseason. And Monica McNutt and Charlotte Wilder, how did we get so lucky to talk NBA with those two? T-Wolves Nuggets, game two out in Denver. I don't know if anybody expected this. The odds certainly didn't over at the sports book, but Denver is down now, going on the road, down 0-2. No star defender in Rudy Gobert. He was having a baby, so he was out. You would think the defense would lack. You would be wrong. They held Denver to under 35% shooting, just 80 points for 16 turnovers, 12 blocks, 11 steals. Senior, you always say the series doesn't start until the road team gets a win. Well, they got two, so what do you call that?
Man, this one may have started and been over, and may be over the way Minnesota is playing right now without Rudy Gobert, which does bring up the universal question that we can talk about. Again, we just did this with Scottie Scheffler. If your spouse or partner is having a baby, would you miss, you know, an event? Would you miss your game? And Scottie Scheffler said he would. But he never got the page or the call. I remember way back when Phil Mickelson was wearing a pager at a major and saying he would leave. And Rudy Gobert did, stayed in Minnesota and for the birth of his child. So there are those that will look at it and say, hey, don't do that. Well, and others that will say, hey, it's your choice. Do what you got to do.
And to Claudia's point, last night we had this happen in both the NHL and the NBA, the difference being that Brandon right. Carlo actually showed up for the Boston Bruins and managed to score a goal when he got back from there. So he kind of got to double dip in a way that seems pretty rare in the world of athletes having to make this choice. Claudia was disgusted before the show at the notion that any of these guys would skip out on the birth of their first child to go out here and play their little sports game.
Yeah, I mean, especially basketball. It's like, you don't realize, you have Anthony Edwards, you have Kat. Golf is different because it's you by yourself. But still, bro, whatever, you can play golf. I get that it's the PGA. But still, you have a child. It's your one and only. And even if it's not your one and only, even if you have five kids, you can't. Gojo, what do you mean? If your wife is in labor, you do not leave her alone. What?
I mean, maybe she wants you to go play. I mean, maybe she understands this is the playoffs or this is a unique moment. I mean, God forbid this was something like during the finals and you don't know if you're ever going to get back here. So It's a complicated question.
Matt's like, no, I don't want ice cream. And then you don't get me ice cream and I'm pissed for days. This would be, I would be pissed for years. So I just don't think you want to cross
Claudia,
that line. That's me.
Claudia, this happened twice to me. So Mike was born in September and Jake was born in December, both during the season. Mm. So there was always the possibility of this. And my wife adamantly said, if you're at an away game, you stay and you play. Oof. You know, do not worry. And which that was her side. And you know, you could be right. In some instances, they say, go stay away, but they really want you to come there and be there. But it really turns out to be up to the guy. Do you want? And I don't know what I would have done. I don't know. That's what my wife told me, stay and play. Now, Mike was born with, which he absolutely was disgusted me. We always say, if you're getting born during the season, don't do it on an off day, which was Tuesday. I think he was born on a Tuesday, so I never got an extra off day for it. This was before guys got paternity leave, so we were right back to work. And so that's what my wife had said. So Claudia, I know we were talking before the show, you talk differently. You said if you were married and having a child, you would expect, if your husband played sports, you would expect him to be with you and not at the game, correct?
I don't care what event it is. And I'm probably going to get some flack for this. I don't care though. Like, this is a two-way gig, man. Like, we're a team, okay?
The Super Bowl? What if it's game 7 of the NBA Finals?
Okay, actually, well, I guess you can sort of hold it. I don't know, because clearly I've never had a baby. But can you hold it for like an hour?
No, not really.
Just
not
like
really. 2 years ago, Mike.
Two years ago
when Kansas City was playing Philadelphia in the Super Bowl, before the game, Nick Allegretti, who is has left Kansas City, I was talking with him in pregame. He FaceTimed with his wife that morning before, or the night before, the morning of the game. She had twins. I think it was back in Chicago. He was FaceTiming during that. I was obviously decided with them he was going to play the Super Bowl. Now, he didn't play a lot in that one. Played started last year's because of an injury, but he was that was a classic. What do you know? He stayed there and missed the birth of the kids. It's a decision that the two people have to make.
You guys try pushing twins out of you, okay? You need a support system there. That's
well, wrong. That was the Kelce Super Bowl from 2 years ago too, where obviously Kylie Kelce, Jason Kelce's very famous wife, then pregnant wife, was going through a lot of how to do that. So the birth plans around sports are something we could spend a lifetime talking about. Yeah. I can hear our producer Bailey through gritted teeth in the background, wondering when the hell we're going to talk about the beatdown that his Minnesota Timberwolves put on the Denver Nuggets. And, Dad, I said it to you guys before the show. We are currently watching the NBA series version of the beginning plot of Rocky III, where the younger, hungrier version of a very similar team has come up and absolutely punched the champ in the mouth right now. The Denver Nuggets look flustered on their own court last night, early and often. The length and tenacity of this Minnesota Timberwolves team that's been the best defensive team in basketball for the entirety of the season. It's been the best defensive team in basketball in the postseason. So none of this is surprising, except for the fact that it has risen to fluster what we thought was the best team in basketball, Dad. What we all looked around and said, hey, coming off their championship run, finally coronated, finally getting the credit maybe they had deserved for a while for being a very good team. And now all of a sudden, between Michael Malone stomping out all over the court, between Jamal Murray likely facing some sort of penalty for throwing a heating pad out on the court in frustration because he was getting locked down. Dad, this team looks all out of sorts and like they have no answers right now through two games of this series.
Completely agree. And for a former defensive player, even though it was a different sport, the way it's going now, I'd like to see Cleveland against Minnesota in the finals to see some defensive play which I don't think anybody would want. This was, you're right. I mean, the frustration level of Jamal Murray obviously showed when we'll get to when he threw the heating pad out on the floor. But his frustration, dude, every time he tried, not every time, but going into the hoop, man, he was just getting his shot blocked. I mean, the length of Minnesota, as you mentioned, was just on display. Claudia mentioned it in the beginning, 12 blocks in this game. It was just that their length was taken over and just frustrated the living hell out of this Denver team. Even Malone, as you mentioned, Karl Anthony Towns ran through Murray not once but twice. The second time should have been a foul. Should have been, as was called by the, I believe it was, I forgot who was calling the game, but said, you got to call something. You either got to call a block or call a charge on that one. Nothing was called. And then Ant-Man goes up against Caldwell Pope and jumps in the air, and they hit, and it's called on Denver. Ant-Man scores. Mike Malone comes flying out on the court right into the ref Mark Davis's face. Mark Davis yells back at him. I was like, good for him. And nothing is called. No technical, no nothing. Mark Davis said, you know, he explained why there was no technical call there. And I was cool with it. I know you and I disagree, Mike, because it's called differently. You mention it and you're right. You get a player that looks at a ref wrong and they tee him up. And I think it's ridiculous. So I'm to the side of stop calling them so quickly. And Mark Davis certainly didn't call it quickly. He let this thing go, let him play on. But the frustration absolutely continued. Murray just 3 of 18 from the field, 0 for 4 from three-point land. It was actually Gordon who led the team in scoring with 20 points, hit a couple of early threes, and was hot there after he had been very cold from there. But, man, Mike, the frustration Minnesota is laying on Denver. I don't see Denver getting out of this one. It's happened 5 times in league history that a team has lost their first 2 games at home and come back. The last one was just a couple of years ago, Clippers over the Mavericks in 2021. But I don't see that happening here.
So, Gojo, let me ask you that, because I'm looking at the odds right now, which have obviously shifted. The Nuggets, plus 400. We're talking about a team that was right up there with the Boston Celtics to win it all. Now you're getting a relatively great price on them, but your dad just said he doesn't see them turning this around. Do you?
I struggle to see the path back just because, I mean, my God, Minnesota is going to be a hornet's nest when they walk into that arena. You already heard last night at the end of that game, MVP chance for Anthony Edwards on the road, Wolves in 4 chance in the waning moments of that game. Like, there was it wasn't quite Madison Square Garden invading Wells Fargo in the 76ers-Knicks series, but it was still a pretty loud show of force from that fan base that I'd imagine once they're back in the Twin Cities is really going to let them feel it. You're going to be whole and get Rudy Gobert back more than likely. And, you know, I mean, maybe you can dispute what that means considering how well things looked without him on the court. But yeah. I would still say, Dad, I struggled to see the path back just because you saw last night injury pop up again. I think it was Jackson that went out in that game at one point with an injury later on in that game for the Denver Nuggets. You have Jamal Murray still not quite looking himself, and maybe it's the calf injury. Maybe it's just the length in defense, but I have not looked and seen. And quite honestly, Dad, I'll be curious what kind of criticism Nikola Jokic gets coming off this series, because you are now going to be not only, you know, probably the reigning MVP coming off this series, largely looked at as the best player in the world. And for the most part last night, Dad, in critical moments, there was never really an, oh yeah, just get the ball to Jokic to steady all this, and Nikola Jokic taking over the game to try and right the ship. That never really happened. And when you're the best player in the world, that's usually the kind of thing we expect you to do, is come in and find a way to calm this down. And even he, who after the last game talked about being frustrated, was asked what more he could do against all of the length that Minnesota trots out. And he said, have another carbon copy of me ready to check in off the bench. Like, this is as frustrated and listless as we've seen Nikola Jokic in a while. And that's usually something that people come down on you for.
Yeah, he went 16-16-8 in this game. Took the third most shots. It was Murray that took 18 shots. Gordon took 14, and then Jokic took 13. So you're right. People are going to look at him and say, are you going to take more control of this game? But I tend at this point, I give way more credit to Minnesota and their length in what they've done to frustrate this team, so much so that the refs did miss the Jamal Murray. Yeah. You know, when these guys go on the sideline, you see him put heating pads on and different things. And all of a sudden, play was going on down on that side of the floor of Denver's bench. And all of a sudden, you saw a heating pad come flying out onto the court during play, which really is a bad move, and that was Jamal Murray. The refs missed it. He would have got teed up, and as, again, Mark Davis said, he would not got ejection. For an ejection, you would have to determine it was thrown directly at somebody instead of throwing in frustration. And I think it was throwing in frustration. He had a lot of frustration last night. But, man, that's a bad move that he's going to hear from the league about.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they need to come down on him in some way because that was during play. Like, that could have seriously injured somebody out there on the court. So they've absolutely got to hit him with something there. I'd agree taking him off the court's probably not going to be it. But you never know at this point. And I think that's overall, Dad, the thing that's most interesting about this is the Denver Nuggets got such a, I think in my mind, reputation of being the steady team, of just being this unrelenting monster that last year we watched them walk down the Lakers a bunch in the postseason. This year we watched them walk down the Lakers a bunch, and they never seem overly flustered. Last night they were flustered. There was a loss of composure. Like, we could talk about, I was pissed no one called a technical on Michael Malone because I watched them call a technical on Anthony Edwards for just looking in somebody's direction after doing some of the coolest stuff imaginable, and I think that lack of consistency is concerning. But to me, the overall thing is, and I get Michael Malone's probably trying to fire up his team and you can skew it like that, but for the Denver Nuggets overall, it looks like a lack of composure right now. They don't know how to act now that someone's come out and bullied them. And that, to me, for the psyche of this team, they, you know, will give them all the benefit of championship medal, but that does not look like a group that was mentally tough during that game last night, amongst other things.
I agree. It's like, how do you react? You know, it's always, you know, easy to say what you're going to do when times are easy, right? But what happens when you get punched square in the face, right? Like the old Mike Tyson quote of everybody's got a game plan until you get punched in the face. And they got punched in the face. So what, their eyes are watering, their nose is bloodied, and how do they come back? And they kept repeatedly, Claudia, getting punched in the face.
Well, I think what we have to look at, too, is that last series with the Lakers. Because, Gojo, you said they got through them again, but look at those individual games. The Lakers got those double-digit leads. The issue is, I think the Lakers ran out of gas, where it doesn't look like this Minnesota team will ever. Right. I know that's dramatic to say, but it really doesn't seem it, Gojo.
Well, and like the Lakers team didn't play defense near to this level either. Like, that's the other part is. But I guess, Claudia, the reason that I had kind of excused it in a way that now seems, you know, not the best move was because we had watched them do that last year to the Lakers on a team that ultimately won the championship. And so it looked familiar enough where both cores are largely the same, where it's like, all right, that's just the nature of this matchup and maybe not the nature of the team overall. But now for this Denver team that I thought the strength of them guys was the fact that they had so much variety in their lineup, right? You had Jamal Murray, who could be this creator from the top. You've got Aaron Gordon, who's one of the most unique offensive presences, defensive presences in terms of what he affords you from a size and athleticism standpoint from the wing there. You've got Michael Porter Jr. as the shooter, and of course Nikola Jokic, who has the straw that stirs the drink and does everything else. And Dad, in a game like this where the other team, so much of their identity was built around, hey, we've got these twin towers down low, we've got these two bigs that we're going to use, you would assume in a series like that the matchup would skew in favor of the reigning MVP in Nikola Jokic, or excuse me, about to be MVP, not reigning MVP. But you just assume it was skew in the favor of Nikola Jokic, who's the most talented big man in the league right now, and yet we're watching him get swallowed whole.
I agree. I mean, this is way, they always say, what's the reason? Is it bad play by one or great play by the other? I'm giving Minnesota all the credit in the world. Yeah. They're playing well, and they're forcing Denver to be bad. Denver's shooting was horrific. They shot, as Claudia had mentioned before, under 35%, 29 of 83, 9 of, I think, 30 from three-point land. That there's bad shooting, and there's a direct effect from a team playing against you. And to the point that Claudia also made of leading at halftime, they've played now 7 postseason games, and in 6 of those games, they were trailing at halftime. Actually, game 1 of this series, they were winning at halftime, 44-40, and they still lost this game. This one was a joke, 61-35 at half, but we had mentioned that after the Lakers series is that just for what we talked about, that the Lakers would wear out because they didn't have the stamina that a Minnesota team does right now. So getting down at halftime to a team like Minnesota is going to be way more detrimental and harder to come back from. And it certainly, last night wasn't even a game. But as I said, in game 1, they actually had the lead. And then it was Minnesota who had the better third quarter. So this is all credit to Minnesota. And I still go back when Philadelphia lost Embiid, how they dropped from third to eighth. And when Carl Anthony Towns went down, Anthony Edwards stood up and said, I am the man, and I'm going to keep this team right near the top of the conference. And he did, up to the last day of the regular season, had him right there. They get Cat back, and they are flying a lot. This is a lot what we thought maybe Philly was going to do. And this is on the Western Conference side with Minnesota. It has been unbelievably impressive with what they have done without Carl Anthony Towns and now back when they got the gang together.
Yeah, I think it's a reminder as for the Nuggets side, how you do the little things is how you do everything, and them starting off those games slow. Michael Malone called them out for it and said, we're not going to be able to get down like this going forward, and now it's biting them in the ass, these slow starts and the way that they approach the beginning of games. And on the other side, you mentioned it, man, Anthony Edwards, who is continuing to say and do the right things, came out the other day and said, I don't want you guys to keep comparing me to Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan's the greatest of all time. I don't compare right now. And then in the game last night, he takes over in certain junctures, and he does the shrug there, and we're like, man, listen, you're making it really hard for us to not compare you to Jordan by telling us to not compare you to Jordan. The humility, having all the right answers, and playing the way he is all at 22 years old has become an incredibly enticing package. But coming up next, if we're going to talk about great players and officiating inserting itself into the conversation, let's talk about Knicks basketball next on Gojo and Golic. I want to talk about Jägermeister. Dad, what do you know about Jägermeister?
I mean, well, really, all I know, it's got a really awesome Stag logo. What else do I need to know about Jägermeister?
Well, you should know that you've been drinking it all wrong this entire time.
Damn, that's cold. There's a right and wrong way to drink it?
Yes, there is, Dad. You should be drinking it ice cold at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, to be exact.
Well, you know what? That explains a lot. I've just been pulling it straight off the shelf.
Oh, Dad, I'm so glad I got to you in time. No, that is entirely wrong. The only way to serve Jägermeister is ice cold. So wherever you're at, if you're hanging out with friends or you're at the bar or you're helping your dear sweet father try and get right, call the shots. Cheers with ice cold shots of Jägermeister. Damn, that's cold. And remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjägermeister.com. Remember, drink responsibly. Jägermeister liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York.
The Knicks continue their winning ways in round two with a game one win over the Pacers at home, 121-117. And yes, there was some suspect officiating, but I think it was mostly due to Jalen Brunson's fourth straight 40-point game. As you can see, 43 points for him, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. And the first time that a player has done this, 4 straight 40-point games since who? Yes, Michael Jordan. So, of course, a reporter asked him about that comparison, and this is what he had to say.
No one scored 40 in 4 games since Michael Jordan. Well, what's telling you you have to do this right now?
Michael Jordan?
Stop.
Damn!
I would say nothing. I'm not going thinking I need to score 40. That's not my mindset at all. My mindset is to be aggressive, to make plays for myself and for others.
He also became the first player ever with 40-plus points and 5-plus assists in 4 consecutive playoff games. As you said before with Ant, it's nice to see a player that is as good as Jalen Brunson to be that humble. I don't know. Do you see a little bit of MJ in him more so than Anthony Edwards? Or how would you kind of put up that comparison, Gojo?
No, I think Jalen Brunson's game's so different because, as Dominique Foxworth, a friend of the program, has referred to him, he's a square body. He's not a dynamic athlete the way Anthony Edwards and Michael Jordan are. He's a guy that's got to use, you know, tempo, his physicality, all these tricks that he uses to get space on offense. But Dad, he combines it with this tenacity. He combines it with this ability to operate in the clutch the way we always know at the end of the game. Like, it is not hard to find out or figure out what the Knicks are going to do at the end of the game. They're going to give the ball to Jalen Brunson, and they're going to say, our better is better than your better. Even in a game where their bench get outscored, it was like 46-6 or something in terms of bench points in this game, because the Knicks don't have a bench, because they run 7 guys out there, and you've got Josh Hart being interviewed at the end of the third quarter looking exhausted, and they somehow still find another gear, Dad. I just don't know what's inside this Knicks team, but it is different than almost everyone else in this postseason, because to play the kind of minutes they have all throughout this playoff run and to weather that flurry and pace from Indiana is incredible.
46-3 was the bench scoring. But listen, the Pacers have done it all year. They are the top bench scoring team in the league during the season. They are one of the top teams scoring in the paint. At 1.62 of their points was in the paint. I know it ended up being more than that. They're a paint team. They're a bench scoring team. But you're right. You wonder at some point, you know, does this start to wear on New York? Every one of the players except for Hartenstein played over 40 minutes. He played 36. Everybody else played at least 42 minutes in this game. And this is another one. They just came off an incredibly physical series with Philadelphia, and this is in close games. And this again was the same. You know, this was a close game. This was a physical game. I don't think it's going to be as physical as the Philly series, but still. And for guys like me and guys within 10 years of me, this is so reminiscent of the Pacers and Knicks matchups back in the day, as all the old cronies like me are going to talk about, of what we saw with some of the great players and great rivalries back then. Well, obviously, there are new participants and players in this one, and it's fun to watch. And it's a shame, but, you know, we see it, Mike, it happens, that the refs end up inserting them, well, and they're not trying to insert themselves, but we've seen a number of times this postseason where that two-minute report after the game has talked about missed calls, and the whistle's blown more than any other sport in basketball, right? It has stopped for whatever reason in basketball more than any sport. So, and plus the amount of fouls you're going to call or things you're going to call, there's going to be mistakes, but there's been some egregious mistakes. And one happened yesterday, Mike, that says is not reviewable, that I do not understand why it is not reviewable.
Well, yeah, the kickball thing. No, I'll be interested to hear what kind of explanation there is with that when we talk to Monica McNutt later on in this show. Because, yeah, you had two big sequences in this game. The first came with about 50 seconds left. It was tied ball game, came down. The Knicks were getting ready to initiate offense. Jalen Brunson, I believe, throws a pass, and one of the Pacers' defenders deflects it with his hands, and they're getting ready to go on a fast break and steal this. It's supposed to be a turnover, and the refs blow it for the kick ball that you can't review. Indiana had a challenge in their pocket still, but for some reason that call's non-reviewable. So now the Knicks get the ball back, and it's the Dante DiVincenzo go-ahead three. So it directly impacts the outcome of this game. And then, of course, right at the finish, 13 seconds left, they come down, the Indiana Pacers trying to even this thing up. And Miles Turner gets called for a moving screen, eerily reminiscent of the UConn-Iowa call late in that game that sealed things there. But, Dad, here, far less egregious. Like, I know Stan Van Gundy was sort of beside himself in the booth, and I tend to agree. Like, we saw a different angle on that UConn-Iowa game where clearly it was a moving screen, and she moved well outside of the frame, and it was almost like an offensive lineman defending the cone. This one, man, it was so subtle that I don't know how in that moment you call that right as they're getting ready to initiate the offensive set and put the nail in the coffin immediately after that.
Yeah, that was one you mentioned. Stan Van Gundy, he went back to those days I was talking about and mentioned a couple of guys, including, I think, Charles Oakley, saying they would be laughing at that kind of a screen of how soft it was. And DiVincenzo went down like he got, you know, hit by a truck. And got the call. This is, again, one of those, Mike, do you not call? What if you're the other side of that? If it was technically a foul and they don't call it, are you like, well, wait a minute, if that's a foul, you got to call the foul. It's this debate will never end at the end of a game of what you call and what you don't. But when I saw that, I thought, are you kidding me? That you're calling that, and plus
I get
acting
that pops
that went
up
on
by when it's egregious, but in this case, it didn't seem nearly egregious enough to where I think most people, if you hadn't called that, I don't think Knicks fans are running to the message boards or out on street talk talking about the referees after the game. I don't think it was that egregious.
Listen, I agree with you. I was surprised. And like you said, in a close game like this, that turnover obviously means a lot, just like the kick ball that was under a minute to go. It was 1:15 all, I think. And that's one, again, I don't understand. I said this in the NFL, there are certain things reviewable and certain things that are not. They keep talking about, well, roughing the passer be reviewable. They keep saying no. I don't understand. You're reviewing everything nowadays. You can review where the ball goes off of, you know, and all that we've seen. Is it a foul? Is it marginal contact? Are we going to hear that again? You can play is stopped on a kickball. Play is stopped. So how can you not be able to review it and see where the ball goes off a player and decide, well, wasn't kickball, went off the hand. We go back, it's Indiana's possession. So that one, listen, I will never come on a show and act like I know it all, because anybody that knows me knows I don't know anywhere near all of it. And I would love, I can't wait to have Monica McNutt on and ask, why isn't that reviewable? I don't understand.
And I think maybe the reason we're talking so much about the refs is because this is expected to be a rather tight series, at least that first game was. Yeah. So I'm taking a look at the odds. I'm a little surprised to see the Knicks. Now I get it because they got that first win, but they're minus 340 favorite. So again, a good price on the Pacers at plus 275. Are you enticed at all, either of you? Gojo, I see maybe your face is looking like maybe that's a bet you'd make, or is it hard to bet against Brunson at this point?
Yeah.
No, I think you could absolutely sprinkle that money on the Pacers. Listen, the Pacers came in and matched their energy. Like we talked about the last series, the 76ers had a banged up Joel Embiid that affected their ability to go out and rebound, and New York took advantage of it. And in this game, especially in the first half, they kept that New York off the offensive glass. They matched their intensity in that area of trying to attack the boards overall. Now, I think the Knicks ended up like +8 in the rebounding matchup, so they still got theirs, yeah, especially towards the end. But between that and the pace, and we talked with Tom Haberstroh about this yesterday, and he said this is the exact style of basketball. It's a problem for the Knicks. Josh Hart was doing that third quarter interview and looked exhausted, was trying to say, yeah, we're comfortable playing at this pace, but you could see him pouring sweat. And at some point, you feel like it has to have some sort of effect on them, but it's just as much to me, Dad, about the fact that the Indiana Pacers came out and absolutely showed you, hey, we are deep enough, we play fast enough, and we have got enough quality players who are also going to attack New York in the way that few other people were capable of doing. I think this series goes the distance. Like, this looks like a seven-game series. Yeah. Mostly because I don't think the Knicks can win any other way. When you're going to play seven guys and rely on Jalen Brunson to just grind it out in clutch moments, you're going to end up with a lot of games that look close like this. And so, yeah, I think the Indiana Pacers absolutely have what it takes to take this series the distance as we get started with a very exciting second round of the NBA postseason. Growing up playing sports, I learned really quickly that how you do the little things is how you're going to do everything. That's why coaches always harped on us about having our hand behind the line on sprints or picking up our locker, because that was going to directly translate to critical moments on the field, making sure we're lined up right, taking the right steps so we can go out there and execute and win ball games. Small actions can have big benefits, just like how taking care of your gut can support your entire body's health. That's where our friends at Seed come into play. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic is going to benefit your gut, skin, and heart health in just two little capsules a day. I just got my welcome kit and started taking Seed's DSO1 myself, and I'm loving it. I love the convenience of being able to have it in the cabinet with my other supplements because you don't need to worry about refrigerating it, and I love the free travel vial that comes along with it. I'm constantly on the road, and so being able to take DSO1 with me on the go is huge for my lifestyle here. I'll tell you what else I love is the fact that it's backed by science. DSO1 was developed in collaboration with Seed's scientific board and based on their foundational work in probiotics and the microbiome. And with new clinical trials and breakthrough research published in top scientific journals, Seed's probiotic research, development, and innovation programs make DSO1 a product you can trust. And it's great with convenience, too. Probiotics and prebiotics work best when they're used consistently, just like any other routine health habit. And Seed's subscription service is going to easily help build DSO1 into your routine, again, with no refrigeration required. So, trust your gut with Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/gojo and use code 25GOJO to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/gojo, code 25GOJO.
Despite speculation in Miami, Jimmy Butler will not be traded. That's according to Pat Riley, president of the team, and he said it a little more roughly than that. But just so you know, yes, the Heat got knocked out in that first round series to the Celtics. Jimmy did not play because he was out with an MCL. He posted a video saying, well, if I was there, we would have knocked him out. We could take on the Knicks. And Pat Riley said this.
You know, for him to say that, you know, I thought, is that Jimmy trolling? Or is that Jimmy serious? You know, If you're not on the court playing against Boston or on the court playing against the New York Knicks, you should keep your mouth shut in your criticism of those teams.
Emphasis on the shut. So, and also, I said the contract issue. So Butler has 2 years left on his current contract, player option for roughly $52 million for the 2025-26 season. But I think the Pat Riley sound is sort of what stands out here, Senior.
Oh, listen, Pat Riley's 72. This is my generation stuff right here. There is no doubt about it. Maybe even the younger, because this younger generation, they get out there on social media, right? They talk. This is how they express themselves. And I remember, Mike, when we were still at ESPN, there was a moment where I was criticizing something that got out, and you were the one that kind of set me straight and said, man, this is the athlete of today. They're out there a little more on social media doing their thing. And while I disagree with some of it, it is the way it is, because I agree with Pat Riley and this. If you're not part of the series, don't want to hear from you. I don't want to hear what woulda, coulda, shoulda if I was playing in the game. You weren't. So I absolutely agree with Pat Riley, but I also understand in today's world, athletes are out there talking, podcasting, out on Twitter, out on Instagram, out always saying stuff. So I see that side of it as well. But this is truly where a generational gap is of the old timers saying, you know what, if you're not involved in it, don't want to hear what you would have done because you weren't on the court, so shut up.
I do sort of laugh, though, because it's not like Jimmy Butler's some bench warmer who never plays. Like, he's the only reason your team's been good the last few years. If anyone's allowed to talk, it's probably Jimmy Butler. But I also do think, Dad, to this point, if anyone's going to appreciate the approach Pat Riley takes here, it's Jimmy Butler, because it's not like Jimmy Butler's some Gen Zer out there on the court. The guy approaches basketball like a 90s dude. He's one of the guys that's gone out there and been gruff and kind of approached it in the more old school way throughout most of his career. It's why we saw him butt heads with a lot of the guys in Minnesota. It's why we think Joel Embiid liked him so much when he was with the 76ers. So I think if anyone speaks the same love language as Pat Riley, it's probably Jimmy Butler. And so I looked at this, Dad, and I didn't think this was any sort of indictment on Jimmy's future with Miami. Now, he's probably going to try and ask them for an extension there. And Pat Riley basically said, this is tied to any more money we're going to give to a guy in his mid-30s is just going to be about availability. And that's been the one thing. Jimmy's missed 100 games since he's been a member of the Miami Heat.
Yes.
And so that part concerning to the man getting ready to make the investment.
I agree. That of what Jimmy said has no effect on him staying in Miami or not. It is exactly what you said. And what Pat Riley said about it could be a 2-year, $113 million extension. Pat Riley said, that's a big decision on our part to commit those kind of resources unless you have somebody who's going to be there and available every single night, which Jimmy Butler wasn't. They, in fact, used 37 different starting lineups in 89 games. That's a franchise record. So, and this happens. We talk about this in every sport. Somebody becomes a mass unit. Somebody gets hurt more than they normally do. And Butler is up there in age, and he's starting to get injured. And this is kind of a thing where you would look at and say, yeah, do we commit, you know, 50-some million dollars a year for another 2 years on an extension to a guy that may not be available all the time? That's a fair question to ask.
I think it's as we're going to talk about this in tandem with what's getting ready to go on with Paul George and the Los Angeles Clippers, I think listening to both the respective figures from each organization talk about their team going forward is kind of a good reminder of how different the place each organization is in, because Lawrence Frank, the president of basketball ops for the Clippers, came out and basically said, we want to bring James Harden back. We want to bring Paul George back. We want this core back in Los Angeles, despite the fact that they are oft injured and despite the fact that they've accomplished nowhere near what the Miami Heat have accomplished during Jimmy Butler's run. But on one side, you have Pat Riley, who's incredibly sure of himself, whose entire NBA career is littered with success that's basically unparalleled as a coach, player, and now as a head of the organization and front office, and a knowledge that as long as you are the Miami Heat, you're not going to really struggle to get people to want to come play down there, between the fact that Miami's always been a free agent destination and between the fact that the Heat culture, as much as we like to make fun of it, yep, is always a sell to get guys down in that organization. You've got Pat Riley, who's like, yeah, I'm not going to just kowtow to whatever players out here right now at the helm because I believe I can remake us no matter what. And on the other side, you have the Clippers that are just holding on for dear life, that are ready to go into a new building and are saying, hey, we really need these guys to stay together in order to make anything happen and try and sell ourselves as a team worth watching in a town that already views us as second best.
Yeah, and what are you going to do to stay together? At what price will that be, right? Because it still hinges on Kawhi Leonard. Because James Harden, I think things went better than we all thought they might go. He still pulled his disappearing act occasionally in the playoffs, shooting horribly in some games. But I think their thought is, man, if we can get Kawhi healthy, which is a big if with that balky knee of his, of what they could possibly do, because they're all going to be a year older. Now, Paul George has a player option of over $48 million that he has till June 30th, just like LeBron. I think his is 50-some million. They have till June 30th. Do they exercise that player option, or do they become free agents? He's eligible to sign four-year, $221 million extension up to June 30th, is Paul George. And if he becomes a free agent, basically without diving too deep into the weeds, if he's a free agent, the Clippers can offer basically $9 more million than everybody else. Personally, Mike, I think he's gone. I think he's going to move on. I don't know how much you can trust Kawhi Leonard, who is obviously such a great player, but one of the guys that we've talked about this year, we've seen it, some top players that have been injured and how it can cost your team. And this is an injured older player. So I think it's going to be pretty tough for them to keep that band together.
Yeah, I would imagine, and I don't know if we have betting markets open yet for the future of any of these players or if that was even going to be a thing. But man, Paul George to the 76ers seems like it is the veritable certainty coming out of this offseason. The Sixers have the space. You've got a burgeoning superstar in Tyrese Maxey that you can show off as the young player. You've got Joel Embiid, who I've mistakenly said this before about Jokic. Joel Embiid, who is still the reigning MVP of the NBA at this particular moment. All of that as a sell. And yes, we understand you're going to have to start to think about how you legislate Joel's minutes differently based on how injury has popped up at the end of almost every postseason. Joel said, hey, these are freak injuries that pop up. After a while, when they keep happening in succession like this, they stop really becoming freak injuries and start becoming the thing that you've got to plan for. And I feel like Paul George will go a pretty long way in how you plan for that if you're the 76ers. So I'm sure, Dad, he's going to be the big swing they try and take this offseason.
Yeah, and what a difference in how teams are going about the offseason, right? Daryl Morey basically has said, we've got a lot of work to do. We have a lot of changes that are coming. You know, we got stuff to do, where Matt Ishbia over with the Suns is like, don't look over here. Everything's fine. We know we got destroyed in the playoffs with some stars on this team, but we're good. We're right where we want to be, where the fan base just has to be saying, what the hell are you talking about? And Daryl Morey is like, listen, we got changes to make. We got things to do. And I do think Paul George is going to be one of them.
Hey, man, listen, all I'm saying is maybe retroactively, Claudia talked about it before, we're looking back and going, all right, how good were the Lakers then, really, if this Denver Nuggets team is going out here? And conversely, hey, are the Suns a little better than we gave them credit for, considering what this Minnesota team looks like right now in round two, burping the champs through two games? Like, maybe the Suns weren't quite as far off, and the fact that they were even able to go out and do what they did in a year where they were just putting all these pieces together should inspire a little bit more hope. We're all trying to level set right now after the shot heard around the world from the Minnesota Timberwolves last night, and so we're going to try and stake stock of that and put all the pieces back together on the NBA side. We've got Charlotte Wilder coming up in about 15 minutes, Monica McNutt coming up another 20 minutes after that. But coming up next, Badman returned to the NFL field yesterday. Joe Burrow and Kirk Cousins. What can we learn about both as we head into this NFL offseason next?
We're back here on Gojo and Golic, learning more about Kirk Cousins' breakup with Minnesota. According to Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated, Minnesota had told Kirk they were going to draft a quarterback high in the draft, and despite different things in the contract, regardless, it looked like he was going to be on his way in 2025. And that's all well and good, but the Falcons then picked up a quarterback despite signing Kirk Cousins, and that was before the Vikings did. Vikings got J.J. McCarthy at 10, and the Falcons picked up Michael Penix Jr. at 8. So, Gojo, how should Kirk feel about this?
Yeah. Dad, I can understand any human reaction here, right? Because we always hear that it's not business, it's or not personal, it's just business line from everybody here. But it's always been, when it's the business, especially of your body, the way that professional sports is, it's always going to feel personal. But I saw yesterday, Rich Eisen basically said that the Falcons did wrong by Kirk Cousins in convincing him to leave his home in Minnesota and convincing him to come down here and then not giving him a heads up on the pick. And I generally think, Dad, communication always can go a long way and is never a bad idea. And if you were really thinking about this, if you're Atlanta, I know you're probably concerned about it leaking. I know you're probably concerned about what Kirk's camp would do with that and how would it affect your ability to pick there. In general, I think that professional's courtesy is a good idea. At the same time, everyone who works in a line of work where you're involved with a contract understands they can tell you a million things how they feel about you. The only thing that's the true representation of that is the number on the page. And the Falcons get Kirk Cousins $100 million guaranteed over the next couple of years. So now you just got to come down here and compete. Like, that's it. You are not owed anything by this organization at this point because you're not some legend of this organization. You're not a future gold jacket. You're Kirk Cousins coming down here. You're a very good quarterback who's been paid like it right now, but you're also 34 and coming off an Achilles injury, or 35 and coming off an Achilles injury. And so I can understand the organization not catering their entire lifestyle to this one player.
Listen, we're players, so we usually side with players in situations, but I disagree, completely disagree with Rich Eisen. It's a business, man. It's a business. And any players I talk to now, I always say, don't let it get personal. And as you said, and I went through, it's easier said than done to not take things personal. So you do. And there's a few tentacles here. Terry Fontenot, the GM of Atlanta, was with New Orleans when some guy named Patrick Mahomes was coming out in the draft. And they kind of made it known, we're talking about the draft and information, that they were looking to draft that guy. So it was kind of out there. And what happened? Kansas City jumped them and took Pat Mahomes. So teams keeping things close to the vest during the lying season, I have no problem with. Sorry, gang, players are owed nothing. Nothing. If you want to sit there and say they should do this and they should do that because it's the right thing to do, great. But this is a business, and Atlanta said, we are going to protect ourselves here because obviously they're looking ahead to the next couple of quarterback classes, and if they don't think that the value is out there, then they were going to grab a guy that they think the value is there to do the Green Bay thing of keep a first-rounder behind another quarterback for maybe a couple of years and then put him forward because we think that's going to be our best option going forward rather than waiting to draft another quarterback. And, oh, by the way, they're going to be a better team, so a lot of people don't think they're going to be picking eighth. Now, if you're picking in the late teens or the 20s, that complicates the situation even more.
I'm not saying I agree with the pick any more or less, though. Like, I'm still saying you can disagree with the strategy of all this. I'm just saying your reason why you do or don't do it should not hinge on Kirk Cousins. Because this isn't, for all the conversation about Green Bay, Dad, I'll still go back to, I believe Green Bay should have looped Aaron Rodgers in on what they were going to do with Jordan Love at 21 because that guy is an integral figure in your franchise, and that guy is a future gold jacket and someone who still had MVP-level football left in him. Like, Aaron Rodgers, in terms of the leverage within the organization, had a lot more in his bag than Kirk Cousins did. Like, the report from Albert Breer basically said Kirk Cousins left the Minnesota Vikings in some part because of the fact that they made it clear, hey, we're going to take a young quarterback in this draft, and they ended up doing it with J.J. McCarthy, and they were only willing to guarantee so much of his money for so long in whatever deal he was going to sign. Like, it's been the same message from two organizations, and so if you're Kirk Cousins, that's the reality you have to deal with is they only love you so much, and based on what you have put on tape for Kirk Cousins, you're in a position where you were coveted as a 35 going on 36-year-old quarterback who's never won an MVP, won one playoff game, but been remarkably consistent even coming off an Achilles. Like, you were still valued that much, but you're not that next class of quarterbacks where people will dictate their entire lives around your whims to try and keep you happy. And that's the reality of the situation. And quite honestly, that's probably the right reality for Kirk Cousins, given everything we just laid out.
Completely agree. This guy's done business better than anybody at that position of making money, and the second year of the contract they were talking about in Minnesota wasn't fully guaranteed, and we've known he's had some good situations from the money, and he got that from Atlanta. But yeah, if you want to say Aaron Rodgers should have been notified, okay. But what was he going to do if he was told we're going to take a quarterback? Was he going to say I'm not playing for you anymore? I mean, I
well, Dad,
I
you know this professional courtesy somebody, goes a long way. Even if you're going to get bad news, you'd rather hear it from the people that you work with, correct?
Yes, correct. But I'll still say at the end of the day, it's a business and they don't give a damn, right? They pay you money, you play football for them or you play sport for them. That when it boils down to it, it sounds bad, but that's the way it is. When you say they owe them, you know what they owed? Aaron Rodgers made hundreds of millions of dollars being the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. So while I said I understand what you're saying about professional courtesy, it's not always going to be there. So my thought is don't expect it. Because when you expect it and it doesn't happen, all it does is tick you off. Go into it saying this is a business. And I am not running this business. I may be the best player on this team. I may be walking into the Hall of Fame, but I don't sign the checks. At the end of the day, that's what happens. But as I've said, it's easier said than done. Players are going to get mad when they're not treated on a personal level, but that's just not how it's going to work.
The best organizations, I think it does work closer to that, though, because they understand this is also a business of managing people, and you get the best out of people when you understand your teammates. The Green Bay Packers, clearly, after all that time, did not understand the nature of Aaron Rodgers, and it made those last few years very, very rocky for them in a lot of ways. Now, we learned that tended to be a lot more about him than anything else, but that's beside the point in that. So it was just interesting, Dad, watching that on one side and watching Joe Burrow coming back for the Cincinnati Bengals on the other side, and how different the other half lives when you do have one of those weapons at quarterback that is different from everybody else, where him walking back out into the field is this immediate boost to everybody involved, where he ends the season with a wrist surgery and comes back now, and as soon as you insert him into that lineup, they're instantly a championship contender again, versus on the other side with Kirk Cousins right now, we're having a lot more of these conversations about bruised egos and plans, because the Atlanta Falcons, listen, it's not like the Bengals are any more or less inept of an organization. They've been one that's largely been dragged kicking and screaming towards winning rather than actually trying to usher their team towards it. But when you've got that kind of weapon at quarterback, boy, does it change all of your fates as a team, as a franchise, and as pretty much everything else in the city.
It does. And listen, going to be monster money involved here, but are you at all concerned with Joe Burrow, who, listen, he is the linchpin for this team? He has been in the league 4 years. And half of those years, he has had a season-ending surgery. ACL is rookie year, wrist surgery here. 10 games is rookie year, 10 games last year because of season-ending surgery. Is there a concern at all? There's always a concern, obviously, in the NFL with injuries that's going to happen. But half his career now, he has had season-ending surgery 2 times out of 4 years. So you wonder, is there a little bit of concern? I don't think it's going to change anything, the money that's going to come his way and how that team is going to build around him. They're going to. But if you're a Cincinnati Bengal fan, you got to kind of hold your breath each year of, you know, is something going to pop up here?
Yeah, I'm not all that worried necessarily, but I think it's just a reminder the Bengals have taken the priority of building up the offensive line very seriously. They took another offensive lineman this year out of Georgia to try and continue to shore up that position group. You knew early on in his career Joe Burrow could basically overcome that, and it was Jamar Chase's down there somewhere, but now with that in the rearview mirror, those two injuries that you mentioned, yeah, that's a position they very much got to take seriously in the next iteration of their team as they're building it out in front of Joe Burrow.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.